or if you wanted to make the lieutenant governor. But we made the proposal with the governor.
Lois?
Thank you. When, in California, when they did form this independent commission and knock down their regs by 25%, and it cost $2 million, did you see any indication where it saved the state money? I would assume knocking down regulations 25% would save money.
We didn't pursue that. But, I'm really not up to this. I have a report that really talks about all these kind of stuff, and I think that I don't recall having any impact on the budget on what they were saving like that. But it was an expensive exercise. Couldn't tell you if there was a balancing thing.
I'd just like to add just a little bit, and I think I've been on the Regulations Review Committee, but it's a committee that really, I think, until recently has done very little. I think because of the frustration that the only way we can reverse a regulation is introduce new legislation. And I think any time we've tried to get an amendment or a constitutional amendment so that we could do it differently, it has failed. So there's a great deal of frustration. You know, the Regulation Review Committee basically, you know, hasn't done much of anything in trying to consolidate or review these regulations.
Other questions? Representative Rieger?
Yeah, sorry, I missed part of this. Was the question asked of why the Board of Fish and Game regulations were exempted in this?
Mr. Chairman, when we submitted this legislation with the governor's approval, and if it was going to go, we knew that, you know, that there's that is a big task. And we kind of left it open that there are things that neither the governor nor the legislature may want to have on his desk for approval. So as it went through the process, both the state affairs and even on the Senate side, there was a recommendation that just, you know, some of the things are obvious, APOC, but some of the other things. Board of Fish and Board of Game was a choice, I think, just because they are an allocative thing. I mean, there's more heat on Fish and Game of any board or anything like that. That possibly what we should do is let's see if we can get started with this thing and maybe get back to that later on.
Mr. Chairman, I guess my question, and I don't know the answer to this because I haven't tracked it closely enough, but is it in that particular area of fish and game regs, has there ever been a problem where the legislature has been dissatisfied with the regs as they've come out and had been thwarted by their inability to overturn a reg?
I know there's been dissatisfaction of individual legislators with the actions of the boards of fish and game on individual things, but I'm not certain of any overturning. Usually what it amounts to is legislators get very interested in who serves on the board and what their attitudes are.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Questions, Representative Wallace?
Just a short one. Do we know on the average how many regulations are published per year? Do we know it by governors or by?
Maybe Art Peterson. Stan.
Mr. Peterson?
Through the chair, approximately
150 per year. Brown.
I was just going to ask if we could hear briefly from Mr. Peterson regarding some of the coordinating and oversight work that he does as the regulation attorney.
Peterson, would you state your name for the record, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Art Peterson, Assistant Attorney General. I will say initially that the governor does not oppose this bill. With the fiscal note providing for a staffer, it, of course, is a bit more acceptable. If the bill passes and you don't intend to have it implemented, then, of course, it won't require a staffer. If you want it to mean something, as Representative Porcheau indicated earlier, it's going to take a person to do it. As the attorney in charge of the Department of Law's legal review, I can give some indication, I won't at this time, this case I'd keep it brief, I can give some indication of the amount of time necessary to actually do a meaningful review. It will take an additional person. As to whether that person is a 24, I can't really comment, but I would offer the observation that you want someone who has enough intelligence and possibly enough education to analyze the ramifications of any particular change in the regulations. I don't think you want to try the,
Man on the street,
the lottery or something you said?
Lottery, yeah.
I heard that recommended a couple months ago for selecting legislators, and everybody got a kick out of that. I think a range 24 sounds fairly reasonable. You want someone with some ability to analyze clearly, present it clearly to the governor, and enable the governor to take his position, either approve the reg or not approve the reg. I would like to make a couple of general comments on the bill. As has already been indicated, there are two basic parts, the sections 1 and 2 dealing with the governor's approval and section 3 dealing with the content of public notices. With regard to section 3, I have been working with Representative Porcheau's staff and the staff of the Reg Review Committee to try to come up with a reasonable compromise, and I think we have a reasonable one before you in this proposed committee substitute. I've not seen the draft of the proposed CS that you are considering, but I understand it's the same as the one that was given to the Senate Judiciary Committee for the comparable bill, Senate 384. Thanks, Steve. Right, that looks the same. On the first two sections, I can't tell you much about the absolute need for the governor to approve. As I was analyzing the bill, it occurred to me that maybe what the promoters of the bill were really after was simply to help sensitize the governor to the regulations, make him accountable. And it occurred to me maybe if we changed approving adoption to something like his signature would indicate review, his signature would indicate awareness or knowledge, so that he would be accountable, but you wouldn't be building into the statutory system an elaborate, expensive, time-consuming structure that required the analysis. It's not a great deal of difference there, but a bit of difference that would perhaps enable this to go through more swiftly and be handled generally more efficiently. Again, addressing Representative Brown's point about the difficulty in getting regs through the process in the first place. With regard to the exceptions in Section 2, you should have in your files a letter I sent to Representative Adams with some attachments. My letter to your chairman was dated April 15th. One of the attachments was a letter to, and now I can't seem to find it here, to Senator Hensley, setting out a number of additional exemptions. The basic point, there were several categories. Representative Rieger asked about why fish and game was exempted. One of the main points is that it's a board. It's a broad-based citizen board with a broad cross-section of membership. It already reflects the popular position, popular concerns, and there is a very serious policy question of whether you want in one statute to say, yes, we want these decisions made by broad-based multi-member panels, and then to come along in a bill such as this and say, oh, by the way, the chief executive can veto this broad-based multi-member panel. Those statutory concepts, in my mind, are somewhat inconsistent. We can work with it, and as I say, we are not opposing the bill, but I present this as something for you to think about. In this letter to Senator Hensley, you'll see additional exemptions, such as regulations that implement federal-state programs, where we really have no choice. The legislature has enacted a statute that says, here's a program, do it. Executive agency is created, now run with it. So we run with it, and it means we tie into this federal system, federal statutes, federal regulations, and federal requirements. We adopt our regulations to satisfy those requirements, and there's really little that the governor's approval or disapproval would do to that. I mean, we cut them down and then, in effect, cut down the whole program. We have a long line of Supreme Court decisions that require regulations that are necessary to implement programs. So it's not something that the executive branch can simply ignore. Well, we just won't bother adopting regs. On Representative Wallace's question regarding the coordination or the scrutiny, the Department of Law is by statute assigned various functions in AS 4462060. There are four kinds of things we are to look for. And one is the consistency with other regulations. So we try. And we might miss something. But we try to do that. One of the biggest problems is in related agencies with related functions. They each have a bit of a share in this fish and game versus natural resources versus DEC. They might all be dealing with some resources out there with slightly different aspects of the governmental concern in mind when they're doing the regulating. We try to make sure that the regulations are consistent. That doesn't necessarily mean that we can tell one agency, no, you can't require a permit here because this other agency also requires a permit. If the statute indicates that the agency has authority to establish a permit or, excuse me, set a fee or whatever, we would have to approve it if that's statutorily permitted. But we do try to watch for that sort of inconsistency. But we, as I say, we can miss something. But there is built into the process a whole batch of duplicative, in fact, public notice, hearings, delay times, Department of Law review, and it's not something that we do instantly. So there is time to contact the Department of Law if someone sees that there is an inconsistency between some regulation and another one. Let us know. Tell us if we miss it. There's still a chance to get it fixed. So I would recommend that additional exemptions be built into this to minimize the burden in the governor's office, but I can't do much beyond that. There's both the nature of the adopting entity and the nature of the subject of the regulations that you'd want to consider in considering this list of exemptions. I am trying to scan my notes quickly. Some other members had questions. On the question of intent, that is also something the Department of Law urges upon the agency to try to determine, and we also try to determine. As many of you know, that is a major difficulty in figuring out what the legislative intent was. Sometimes it's because of poor drafting in the statute that passed, but more often it's simply because of a point that never occurred to anyone at the time the statute was going through. There is insufficient guidance. There is no committee report. Your committee reports over the years have evolved from fairly regular committee reports that said something besides the do pass, do not pass ones, to the to ones that are just very sporadic. And once in a while we get a committee report, and right now we get a number of letters of intent. Sometimes those are helpful, sometimes they are not helpful, and sometimes, of course, they try to set invalid requirements that really amount to a nullity. So legislative intent is something that we do indeed try to enforce. We look for it, we advise the agencies on it, we listen to tape recordings, we look in the journals, we study the enactments that you've passed, and we try to get the agencies to adhere to them. And for the most part, I think that that's been fairly successful in getting them to do that in the regs when we are able to discern legislative intent at all. Typically, what we hear is some objection after the fact someone says, that's not what we intended when we passed that 5 years ago. Well, no one ever thought of it 5 years ago, and it might not be the intent currently. And on another point that was raised, how to fix this, how to address the frustration that legislature may feel after the Alive voluntary decision and the corresponding case in the U.S. Supreme Court, pass a bill that sets the restrictions, limitations, guidance that this program that you're concerned about needs. If the executive branch has gone off in the wrong direction, new legislation is what's required. The legislature knows how to do it. It can do it very well. And that's all we need. If the Department of Law says there's no legislative intent, nothing in the record, nothing that we can find, nothing that we can discern from the text of the statute, agency, make your policy decision, and they make it, and the legislature disagrees with it, pass a bill that tells them, whoops, you did it wrong. Here's the direction we want you to go in. The couple of bills that have passed that simply are statutory vetoes and say this, you know, no longer trying it by resolution but by bill, saying this regulation is annulled. Well, that annuls the reg, but it doesn't tell the agency what it needs to do. It doesn't tell the agency what's wrong, doesn't provide the guidance. It says, well, guess again, see if you get it right the next time. And that's not really good management. So my answer to the frustration is pass a bill, tell us the guidelines, the limitations, the restrictions, and that would help a great deal. Mr. Chairman, I have really nothing further in the way of a presentation. I'd be happy to try to answer any questions other members of the committee may have.
Representative Brown.
Of the roughly 150 projects per year that your office does, how many would you say are major policy type, involve major policy issues versus cleanup or other things that probably wouldn't rise to being something the governor should be dealing with? What percentage do you have any feel?
It would be really hard to give a percentage or an actual number, but I would say that major policy issues in regs projects would be relatively rare. But of course, you don't know that when you look at a project. And a regulation could be the simple one-liner or the one-liner repeal, and that in itself could be a major policy decision. Or it could be three major decisions in this 89 batch of AFDC regulations. Each one would require the analysis and the search. But the implication of your question, I think, is exactly correct, that it's very few that actually present a major policy issue.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Thank you, sir.
Thank you. I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. Just very, very quickly, the governor, do you think it is correct that insofar as the governor is ultimately responsible and is the chief executive, that he, in fact, authorize these regulations and at least understand what he is authorizing?
I'm not sure I understand. Do I think it's correct
that
he understands
them? You made a statement about how maybe the governor should sort of sign off on them but not really be responsible for thoroughly reviewing them. And I guess, to me, these are the governor's regulations no matter what we say or do. And I'm wondering if you disagree with that in some way. I mean, it seems to me they're his. He should sign them. He should know what he's signing. And I don't want to prolong the discussion, but if you disagree with that, I'd like to briefly know why.
I guess I would disagree with that slightly because of the exact point Kay Braun was mentioning. If most of the regulations that come through are of a simple managerial nature or a cleanup nature or housekeeping nature, it's not stuff that the governor should be spending time reviewing and approving or being in the position of vetoing. It's stuff that, while in the constitutional or theoretical sense, he's responsible for because he's the chief executive. I think that if he were simply to indicate his awareness, then the legislation would have achieved the political accountability that I understand it to be seeking. But to build in the actual review, you're requiring a great deal more thought because it's a very serious thing to simply veto a regulation that a multi-member panel has adopted.
Thank you.
You need to think about it.
Finally, are you familiar with what the salary is for Range 24?
I can't think right offhand, but Mike Nijic is here from the
Salary is over $55,000 a year. Do you think we could maybe pay somebody 38?
Is that for an A? Step A?
That's the first step, and it's over 55.2. It's over $4,600 a month. Range 21 is $3,800 a month plus. It's $45,600. And a range 18 is $3,100 a month. $37,200 a year. I just thought I'd call that to your attention.
Well, Mr. Chairman, in answer to that, that may well be appropriate. I can't really comment and say, yep, by God, it's got to be a 24. I don't know. I just don't know the answer to that. Comparing it with legislative salaries, legislative staff, other executive branch positions, I think this is the sort of position you want, as I indicated earlier, you want to have a professionally qualified individual serving in.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
In the Office of the Governor, they have approximately 199 permanent people there, 7 part-time and 47 temporary. Don't you think perhaps within that category they would find one person that's capable of doing this particular job without a new fiscal note? Is there anybody in the governor's office capable of doing what's here?
I think there are people employed there. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Committee.
What the chair would like to do is to adopt the committee substitute and then pass the bill out with a zero fiscal note. Ms. Ripson Brown.
Well, I guess having listened to the discussion, I'm still not convinced that we need this. So I think that Section 3 of the bill is good. I think if we are going to proceed with the bill, it would be good to include some additional exemptions.
If you'd like to have it into subcommittee, that's possible, too.
Well, I guess my feeling is I'm going to vote no on it because I don't see the need for it, so I'm not. But if the group wanted to, you know, go back and put more exemptions, I'd be happy to work on it, but it's fine with me to move it. I'm just, you know, stating for the discussion that I don't see the need for it.
Yes, Representative Fischel.
Mr. Chairman, I would ask you, move and ask unanimous consent that we adopt the finance CS for 420.
Any objections?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
No. Oh, I'm sorry. Adopt the CS. I apologize. No objection.
Okay. I do have a drafted CS before. Today we have a CS before us. Yes.
Mr. Chairman, I would move and ask unanimous consent that we report out CS for 420 finance with the accompanying zero fiscal note.
I'll make with a zero fiscal note. Is there any objections? Hearing none, so ordered. Representative Phillips, thanks everybody. Representative Phillips, you're here either for one of your bills, foods?
One of your bills.
House Bill number 388 is an act related to irrigation foods. This bill was before us yesterday, and held over so the committee could look continue. What's the pleasure of the body?
Chairman.
Yes.
I would move we pass House Bill 388 from the committee with individual recommendations.
Is there any objections? Hearing none, so ordered. House Bill number 25.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
We have an amendment pending on House Bill 25.
Okay. What I have before me is House Bill number 25, an act related to affirmative action. Representative Gall, you do have an amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move the amendment, I believe, but if not, for purposes of discussion, I move the amendment at this time and ask unanimous consent. The amendment has been reviewed by the committee.
The chair will object before members have a chance to get that amendment, sir.
Sure. Mr. Chairman, would you like me to briefly go through the amendment for you?
Please. We don't have it.
Oh, I'm sorry. It was distributed out at the last meeting. It should be in everyone's packet. It's in two
is this
parts.
It without...
Yes, ma'am. That is the corrected version. I had tried to get to a typewriter before the meeting today to get it straightened out, but we just ran out of
time. Can we have copies? There's a couple of us without in our packets.
Let me just suggest that you move on with your business, and I'll get this.
While we're waiting for the amendment, the chair is going to call Nicole Harrison to testify on the bill. Ma'am, would you please state your name for the record, please? Peterson have?
My name is Nicole Harrison. I'm here this afternoon representing myself. I've lived in Juneau, Alaska for approximately 5 years. And within those 5 years, I've been seeking employment with the state government for close to three. I first encountered problems with attempting to get employment with the state government when I submitted my applications for a rating in the auditing series. And as far as my education and working experience is concerned, I have a bachelor's degree. I've completed approximately 60% of my MBA program, and I have over 7 years of accounting and or auditing experience. When I first received my rating for one of the auditing job classes within the state government, the rating was quite low. So, of course, I discussed my concern with the classifier. And later on, after pursuing the matter, the classifier admitted to making three mistakes and giving me a final, what she considered would be the final rating. I then waited, of course, to be called for interviews. And when I was not called for any interviews, I began to find out, or question, shall I say, where my ranking was on these particular ratings or registers. In some cases, I can think of at least six. My numerical rating, which was the raw score that would show up on the register, was on a particular day a ranking of four or ranking of five. I still was not being called in for interviews. And so I continued to pursue employment, and I went as far as to contact some of the commissioners to discuss my concerns in reference to their hiring practices. I later found out one department in particular. I had received ratings for this particular auditing job class, and I received an interview. The first interview was a telephone interview that took approximately 30 minutes. I was interviewed for a second time. I met with one of the state representatives here in Juneau, and I was interviewed for a second time, and I still did not receive a job offer. And there was more than one job. In this particular case, there were seven positions at the range 18 level. Later on, I found out, after reviewing the new hire listing, I found out that all seven of these positions, these auditing positions within the same department, were hired, let's say non-minority applicants were hired. And out of seven of them, five of them came in. This was their first appointment with the state. I still have not received any form of job offer. I became quite concerned. I have been interviewed over 15 times, and as I said, as I glanced through the monthly new hire listing, I noticed that positions are still being filled in these particular job classes, like, for example, internal auditor, revenue auditor, field auditor. In most cases, I'm not being notified at all, and as I said earlier, my raw score and a lot of these cases, which would be the score showing up on the register, is quite high, in the 90s. I feel that, as I said, I continue to pursue the matter because of my concern, discussing this matter with a couple of the commissioners to try to understand, you know, how the system works. How is it that I was being blocked at every turn with my experience and with my education? So I began to ask some of the people who were interviewing me why it is that I was not being selected. And in several cases, they just refused to tell me why they were not hiring me. But they continue to go out, reopen the register. They continue to look for new applicants. In some cases, I'm still on the register. In other cases, the register has expired. In one particular case, internal auditor register has not been opened to the outside for over 2 years. This is how I got on in the beginning. I feel that House Bill number 25 is very important to people who live in this state who are classified as minority applicants. I do not feel that the hiring officials are seriously considering people with my credentials in filling state jobs. I've heard the excuse that the budget has been cut and the hiring has slacked up. But as I again repeat, as I look over the monthly new hire list, the hiring is continuing. I'm not being hired. I'm not being told the reason why I am not being hired. I strongly support House Bill 25. There's a strong need for it in the state. And I have additional information that I am more than happy to share with you in relating to departments, the various departments, and my experiences, shall I say negative experiences that I've encountered in trying to become gainfully employed with one of the departments within the state government.
Any questions of any members? Thank you, Matt.
Well, I think that information would be good to have.
Representative Gall, I do have amendment number one before all members know, and we have two copies. One is the corrected copy, I believe. Is that correct?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The copy that says amendment number one is the body of the amendment. I apologize for having it handwritten this way. If the members would just cross out the reference to line 17 on amendment number one, that is replaced with the correction, amendment number one correction. It says there at the top, delete reference in amendment one to line 17, and then it substitutes the other language. The amendment has been reviewed by the sponsor. He indicated no objection at our last meeting. It has no impact on the content of the bill. It only cleans up the language so that the bill clearly states what it is intended to state. If maybe to save time, I would say if any member wants me to specify on a particular item, I will do so. Or if you'd like, Mr. Chairman, I'll just quickly run through it.
Representative Davis, on the amendment.
Yeah, let me see if I have this for my own edification. This right here is, you have amendment here, and this is a correction to this amendment. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
But yeah. They're both to be taken in.
Yeah, it's just one amendment, and it's just that if you take a look at amendment number one, you'll see a reference to line 14, line 15, line 15,
okay.
Line 17.
I gotcha.
Just cross out the reference to line 17, and all you've got is one amendment.
Is the objection maintained? Number one has been adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I do have amendment number two before all members. It's sponsored by Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move amendment number two. Ask unanimous consent.
There's objection, Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yesterday we had a discussion about this, and I did attempt to contact the EEO office today, but over the lunch hour, but was not successful in finding someone. My staff talked with the governor's office, who indicate that the governor does have the authority now to suspend hiring or impose quotas. And I guess it seems to me that it would be more appropriate to have an action as drastic as stopping all hiring in an agency be done by the governor upon recommendation of a group like the EEO office. And I think that the proposed amendment would accomplish the intent, and that's my reason for putting it forward.
Is there any further debate?
Mr. Chairman, the only problem is that it leaves it absolutely discretionary as to what action actually then ever does take place. And we've had a lot of discussion of today with other legislation about how busy the governor is, and my guess is that the governor or his staff is busy enough doing lots of other things that no appropriate action will ever actually occur from these things. And while I would agree that it sounds stern to think that you would actually suspend action here in Section 4, I think in some cases, I know for myself in Fairbanks and trying to deal with some affirmative action kinds of hiring in the Fairbanks area that I get no attention whatsoever, and I get no and I've had a couple of instances at the University of Alaska, and you absolutely get no redress whatsoever. You get a lot of lip service, but you don't get any particular attention. And I don't think that there are enough teeth in the affirmative action laws in the state right now. And I'd like to see something like this put into place so that people will know that there's a sure response if, in fact, they are discriminating in the way that they're filling their positions. And I would oppose the amendment.
Well, Mr. Chairman, part of my uncomfortableness with how this is phrased here is my understanding is that an affirmative action plan is the voluntary goals, or what are now goals, that an agency would set, and presumably this is the top of the leadership of the agency would say, we want so many percentage of minorities and, you know, perhaps broken by class and rank, and then they will attempt to achieve that, but the hiring then being done throughout the agency on an individual basis. And, you know, what is a violation of a plan? If an agency fails to achieve its stated goal, is that constitute a violation? And, you know, if we did that, I'm not sure that the agency's reaction might not be to just set a lower goal or a realistic goal. So, you know, when you're talking about, well, what is a realistic remedy for that and how does that work, it seems to me that suspending the hiring authority of an agency is a pretty severe remedy and could bring the agency, you know, essentially into gridlock when, in effect, people who may have a very good hiring record. And I just think that when you're going to do something that drastic, that is the type of decision that the governor should be involved in. And that is something that, you know, a real policy matter and a management matter. Unlike the matters we were discussing a minute ago, a lot of which would be routine in nature. So I think, you know, if you're talking about imposing some severe action, and I think that it's good to have more teeth in the office and that they should look for patterns and say, well, you know, looking at all of state government at whole, these agencies here have improved their record and these have done nothing, and something, you know, appropriate action, recommend appropriate actions that could be taken.
Yes, Representative Gull.
Thank you, sir. Just in brief response to the comments, I'm reading Section 4419, 442 through 445 of the statutes that deal with the agency and so on. And I think what's happening here, and it seems like a valid enough question for the members to consider, certainly, the governor will order, it says here, for example, in 4419, 444, it says the governor shall establish an equal employment opportunity program and adopt annually an affirmative action plan for the executive branch of state government. So there is, you know, an official plan to ensure equal opportunity in effect. If there is an intentional violation of that affirmative action plan by the agency, this gives the administrative agency in charge the equal opportunity Equal Employment Opportunity Office, the teeth that it needs to say to that agency, you're out of compliance, and if you don't straighten up, we're going to suspend your hiring privileges. It has this office develop these plans, administer these plans, oversee these plans, and this gives them directly some enforcement authority. I guess as an alternative to the amendment, I'm beginning to think that the conversation we had earlier today makes some sense, at least my thought begins to compute. If you're concerned that an inadvertent failure by the agency could lead to a suspension of all of their hiring activities, maybe you want to put in something that says that it was knowingly violated or willfully violated or something of that sort that points out that the agency is unwilling to conform. And having established that unwillingness, then some specific action would occur. But I think taking out the enforcement power sends a message that this is just a token thing we're doing and not truly a something we're going to enforce. So that's kind of the way I would look at it.
Mr. Chairman, I acknowledge that my understanding of this is not that great, and you know, if I do think a subcommittee would be appropriate to work on this. So, you know, I don't know. I hear what you're saying, Representative Gall. We did have a, you know, conversation. We had a conversation with the sponsor this morning on the floor, but I just think there hasn't been adequate time for me to understand. You know, my understanding is, you know, what is there someone here from EEO that can speak to this?
Representative Frank?
I was just going to say that I think we have a bill deadline for the House. It's next Tuesday, and if we dilly-dally around with this thing, we've already spent considerable committee time on it, and I'd hate to see us delay passage of the bill any longer, frankly.
I'm going to allow the members to look at it. It is 3:30. This bill and the political and that mechanical is held over till Monday, and we'll be starting right back where we are. We're adjourned. Would the House Finance please come to order? One of the things I'd like to do basically is go over the differences of the revenues so we can look at them, and then go on to the add-ons of both the House and the Senate. And basically, I'd like you to get the Senate budgets and basically go through them and look at them so we can come back to our respective caucuses and make some reductions. I'd like to make some reductions in different areas, but before I get to that particular point, I'd like to meet with the subcommittee chairmen on an individual basis starting tomorrow at 1 o'clock and on Monday. And basically, one of the things I'd like to take you through is the difference between the House and the Senate, and I did make extra copies for the public if you have it. Basically, the first area is that we have a difference between the House and Senate is in the FY88 revenues. The difference there is approximately $25 million. You'll see our number is 2174.1 and the Senate has 2199. And basically what the Senate has done is increase that number by $25 million. And basically that increase by the contract price for this particular end of the year from June 30th. The other difference that you see up front would be on the Department of Transportation Reserve Drawdown. As you know, we've been working with Department of Transportation on the capital cleanup. We think that the good number is $22.3 million that we can actually take from that capital cleanup. The Senate has taken a number of $47 million. There is, again, is a difference of $25 million that you see in the difference. You will find on the next sheet is the letter that comes to Jay Hogan from Mark Hickey on why that you should use the number of 22.3. As you go down the list, you can see that the operating budget from FY88 expenditures, the jobs bill, and as you can see, there's going to be a difference there in the FY88 supplemental if you would put a star there. That particular bill is House Bill number 444. The Senate plans to put in their particular spending plan approximately $44 million there. You'll see then earlier a difference of $19 million that we'll have there. But I believe that once the Senate looks at the supplemental bill of House Bill 444, they will come closely to the number of 63.8. Continuing down is then you'll see a difference there of our carry, FY88 carry forward. The revenues are the same. The FY89 adjustments, you have a difference there, a little over $6 million. And that basically is the deletion of some power development revolving loan funds. We have a difference on how much you can reduce these loan funds there. So that's why you see the difference there in the FY88 adjustments. Going down on the proposed FY89 expenditures, if you take the two numbers from the House and Senate, yes, we have approximately a $20.7 million difference in the operating budget. And somebody's going to say, what about mental health gets you in suicide? That's a little further down in the bottom section there. You can see a $3.4 million higher number there in the House, but that's how you make your difference of $23 million. We passed a school debt reimbursement that was in Senate Bill number 330. General obligation debts and the other debts is the same. As far as the capital, I would like you to make a notation on the capital budget. I have basically put in the stuff that has been submitted to House Finance by the Governor's Office. That is the reason you see the number of 102.8. That particular number will be reduced considerably according to our particular caucus. You can see on the Senate side, they have put $20 million. That's an $82 million difference. And basically what the Senate is doing at this particular time with their $20 million is matching the federal money. The loans program that we will pass also is we estimate that to be approximately 28.1. The Senate's best guess at this time is $25 million. They are undecided on that. New legislation, it's been historically we passed between $5 and $8 million in fiscal notes, and that's why I put $10 million there. The Senate has five, so we have a difference of five there. Mental health gets you in suicide. It's basically in the bottom of that, and you see another $3.4 million difference there. We will be discussing that hopefully on an individual basis here. Note outstanding amendments. I know this particular committee is interested for the increased funding for municipal assistance, revenue sharing assistance, tax rebate, and renters rebate. Two amendments has been tried in the past, and they've been on hold at least. Those, if you raise the municipal assistance revenue sharing, you will have increased the budget by 21.3. They are, and I want you to know that I've got vehicles here in this particular committee, if you'd like to look at them as far as utilizing part of the Rail Belt Energy Fund for municipal assistance and revenue sharing. That particular bill is House Bill number 255 that is sitting and available for you in my particular committee. If not, you will see a couple bills on this particular matter come over from the other body. Those are Senate bills 476 and 477. And basically, we can reduce this negative number, you know, if we play the shuffle games like the Senate is doing. And I don't know if anybody wants me to pull the Houdini trick and lower this 173 down considerably, but if you'd like for me to play that game, I can do it like the Senate to get to their 12.7. And so that's the comparison I wanted to show you as far as the House and the Senate revenue numbers. The second page, I said, yes.
Do you want us to hold questions till later on this?
Please, if you would. The second page, as says, is the memorandum from Hogan from Hickey. It's regarding the DOT cleanup and the number that should be used as far as revenue sources. The next five, six pages there is the differences that you will see between the agencies. I would ask each of the subcommittees to look at these differences and see what we can go with the reductions. I'm just going to say look at the governor's and his equal employment opportunity, and the project was from Minority Business Initiative. There's 70,000 there. Should we keep it there? Alaska Women's Commission has to restore full year's operation. The House increased that by 25. The Senate put zero. And the Lieutenant Governor's Office for Travel, the House put 24 and the Senate put zero. But I want you to go through these seven pages that you have and look at these increases. The difference between the House add-ons is approximately, the House add-ons were $9.5 million. The Senate add-ons were $6.5 million. And so I just want you to look at these seven pages there. The next set that I have before you, the next seven pages that I want you to look at, is the Senate reduction not taken by the House. It excludes GITCHI, mental health, suicide, And that basic difference is approximately $19.4 million that you need to review. The last four pages that you have in your packet is the differences between the House versus Senate on the Gitche mental health in general funds. So I want you basically to look at these, what the difference are, and what actually need to be funded. And I am going to request that this particular body move these particular numbers in the front section of the budget and not into the agencies for your consideration. I want you to think about it over the weekend. If these particular items such as Gitche mental health, suicide, prove to themselves that they're worthwhile projects, then the administration through OMB can move these increments into the respective budgets. That's basically my presentation as far as we're going. It's one of the things, as I stated earlier, starting tomorrow at 1 o'clock, I'd like the subcommittees to start making appointments with me so we can start sitting down and going through some of these reductions and areas of compromise. If we can do this, this is the first time in 8 years that I've been sitting here that we have both budgets. We have the operating budget. We have control of the operating budget. If you would sit down and work out some of these particular compromises, we can get this session over. You can help in doing the conference committee work right within this finance room. And so I'm asking you for your support in helping me make some of these compromise and reductions. I know it's going to be hard in some areas, but I think that we're basically going to have to sit down and each of us think about taking these. Representative Frank?
A question on your intentions on the capital budget. The difference there are pretty significant, and I'm just wondering what your approach is going to be to it.
My particular approach on this is the chairman is absent of the capital budget, this represents for show. I would like us to see us in this particular fashion. It's basically set a priority on how the capital should be put together. And I'm not saying a number at this particular time, but I think that we should look at basically first is the federal match, look at water and sewer and education. But I'm going to bring this to the my caucus for their priority. But at this particular time, that would be my suggestion. Representative Frank?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Anything further?
Yeah, another question. Plan to, well, obviously the Senate's got a deficit budget and you're projecting one at least 173, and so I assume it's going to come in somewhere between the two numbers. How are you proposing to balance it at this point?
As I said, my plan to balance this particular budget, there is really two sources of revenue at this time that's available to us. There is $239 million in the Rail Belt Energy Fund would be my first source. But I tell you, if we can get the ELF passed, you know, that would bring in approximately $152 million. My preference would be to balance on the ELF. But if the ELF does not pass as a piece of legislation, then we will look at borrowing or grant from the Rail Belt Energy Fund. I don't think it is feasible, as the Senate would like to do. They would like to borrow or get the money from AHFC and ADA at this particular time. And I don't think that is wise at this time.
Mr. Chairman, have we looked again at the legality? I know we've looked at the legality in the past of, or the constitutionality or whatever it is, of bringing money back from AHFC and ADA.
No, I'm not supporting that. I think the Senate is looking into that right now. Representative Wallace?
Mr. Chairman, if everything fell into place, I would assume by the end of next week, if we got the budget straightened out, outside, how soon thereafter could we close down?
One of the things that we'd like to do is look at the legislation that needs to pass. I know this particular group has been working on the JERC legislation. That's a joint economic recovery legislation. And we need to work on some of those, and I think there is some, the workman's compensation bill that's working. We need to see what piece of legislation is a priority of this particular body and the administration and the Senate to see what and see how long. But I would hopefully say that if we can get this done, we can pass the operating budget, include also, if we couldn't do it on Senate Bill 432, then we'd send another piece of legislation that also includes the capital and the loans. The House Bill number 444 would be your supplemental bill. You have another bill that presently Representative Pershore is working on, and that's the appropriation bill, reappropriation bill. But I can't set a date. That's when the adjournment's going to be. Representative Davis?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess my question would be similar to Representative Franks in that the do you see the Senate making any movement towards our figure or the governor's figure on the capital budget? I know that there's $20 million on that, but I assume that's a pretty soft number on their part. I guess that's my first question. And my second question is, do you feel that they are the Senate is pretty firm on getting the money from those other sources that you're referring to, or that's just something they're looking into at this time?
On the first question, as far as the capital, I think the Senate will come up further from $20 million from the general fund match. I think they'll come in and add some projects such as water and sewer, and that's what I hear. As far as getting money from the two areas, AHFC and ADA, I think they're blowing smoke into the public at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I thought one of the reasons for the meeting this afternoon was to try to get the House Finance Committee to come up with some recommendations that we could make in relation to just what we are going to say our revenues are going to be. And reading down the two lists of comparisons, I believe part of our discussion then is, are we going to go with the House numbers that we have before us with the final figure of $2,268.8, which would show a fiscal 9 carryover of a minus 173, or are we going to consider any of the things in which the Senate is proposing here?
That's one of the things is the caucus has not made a determination what type of revenue you're going to do to balance this, and that's one of the things that still needs to be discussed in caucus. And the second item, the reason I have you here, is to basically is go back and look at the difference. As you can see in the operating budget, you can see 1848.7 and 1828. So we have a $20 million difference between the operating budget that I'm hoping that with this, with the sheets I've given you, that you can basically look at it till tomorrow.
Yeah. See, what I thought part of our purpose was to, as the Finance Committee of the House, to look at the revenues and to give some value to what is being proposed, both to the House and to the Senate. And if our values are to uphold what we are proposing in the House, that to make that recommendation to our caucus that, yes, indeed, this is what the Finance Committee recommends to be the revenues, and yes, indeed, under our present spending plan, we're $173.5 million in a hole, and then, yes, indeed, we're going to have to look at some backups. And then I thought we were going to discuss some potential backups to recommend to our caucus, whether it be Real Bell Energy, a loan or a grant, earning reserve, whether we're going to say that oil isn't going to be $15 a barrel, it's going to be $16.50, whether we're going to renew the effort on that, or whether we're going to start looking where we can make some drastic cuts, whether it be in revenue sharing, municipal assistance, longevity bonus, education, public safety, energy equalization, or whatever. I just thought we'd start biting the bullet today and see what we'd come up with.
Representative Boyer?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I frankly like your approach at this point, and I had done some work, had my staff do some work on the health and social services budget, revenue budget, and as well as the Gitche package and the mental health package, and I'm prepared to sit down with you tomorrow and walk through those reductions with you. I see us very, very close in what I'm going to present to you tomorrow as far as being able to get down another $3.5 million in those budget areas so that we can reconcile with the Senate or perhaps even lower if there's a general need to do that. I don't know that it makes a lot of sense to talk about the revenue side of things at this particular time. I think that that is a caucus decision that we're going to have to discuss, but if we were prepared today to talk about the price of oil or something, I could see the wisdom of doing that, but I don't think we're prepared to do that today.
I can discuss the price of oil, but it's one that I'm going to grab out of the hat, right? And basically what you need to do on revenues is you've got to get the administration, the Senate, and the House to agree on a number. And so, you know, we've kind of just grabbed one that which we think that it's going to be $15 per barrel, and we just say to ourselves, what is that $15 going to be? It's going to be a number of 1.891. That's the number that petroleum and the non-petroleum will add another $10 million of revenue that we see in there, and that's why you see the Senate's numbers in revenues there in for FY89 the same, 1908.1. But one of the things is that's what we're going to have to do on a yearly basis is grab that particular number.
And that's what I'm saying, Mr. Chairman, is let's grab a number, whether it be right or wrong. We can argue that out in caucus, I guess, but let's come up with a recommendation.
I think this particular group would recommend the number that has been in the joint meeting by the Senate and House Finance on the 1901.8. Representative Swackhammer.
Thank you. In looking and trying to reconcile the Senate's revenue picture, what is the difference in the carryover? It's $53.5 million difference between a House and a Senate. Where are they getting the 53.5?
The two areas that I discussed with you, the $25 was the increase in revenues. The last 44 days of this particular year was $25 million. The second $25 million is they've taken a different numbers in the capital cleanup. As you see by the letter, I've taken the number of 22.3. The Senate has taken the number of 47. And the next $3 million down, as you can see it, it would be...
See where I'm talking about the carry forward. That,
right.
Do I understand that 25 of that is capital cleanup and the remainder is the increase
in revenues.
Contract price?
That's correct.
Okay,
and I have not taken that, as you can see in the difference there.
Chairman.
Yes, Ripson Davis.
Let me see if I have this correctly. The difference between the two numbers, at least in the operating budget, is approximately $20 million. And you're asking us to take a look at approximately $10 million of the budgets collectively we have. Is that correct? Would you say that's somewhere in the middle ground of what the Senate has proposed? Would that be an accurate assessment of your request?
You know, my statement is if you can get me as low as possible to the Senate's number, I'd appreciate it. But if we can't make that due to some constraints that the caucus has some priorities, then I don't mind that. And if we are above the Senate and, you know, my number above the Senate, my House caps was $5 million above it. But if we get pretty close to down there, then we can go into conference committee and... I know that there are some priority of our caucus that they would like to still protect, especially with some of the Gitche items, mental health, and also DEC. And if that's the pleasure of the group, then that's the way we'll go. Yes, Ripson Brown.
I wanted to raise another topic that relates to House Bill 423, which is the Tourism Capital Projects Bill, which is in a subcommittee right now, and several people are on that subcommittee, and given that we're, you know, scoping down here to the end, I'd be interested in feedback from the members on what your thinking is about how that particular item or those items fit into the big picture. What I'd been contemplating was a proposal to fund some of those projects as a loan from the Rail Belt Energy Fund, and to fund the project statewide, probably reduce the total amount, but fund a number of those projects statewide. The time has come to make that decision, because if we're going to meet the end of the week deadline on moving House bills out of this committee, and that's one thing I wanted to confirm, is that we are still holding to the April 29th deadline to move House bills out of this committee. So I'd appreciate any informal feedback that people have on that, and I intend to get with Representative Pichot as soon as he returns to town and try to determine what his desire is in relevance to the capital budget, because I guess my feeling would be that we would not move 423 itself, but rather pull projects from that bill and incorporate them into a capital budget proposal, or if there's a separate vehicle dealing with the rail belt energy money.
You are correct. The last date to get house bills out of house finance is on April 29th, unless it's something that we need to for adjournment. One of the things that you might want to think about is, you know, ELF would bring in approximately $152 million. What if, and I'm just saying what if, that we put a bill together in this particular committee that says upon the passage of that piece of legislation, 100 men of that would go on a per capita basis throughout the state of Alaska to help the economy in various areas of the state of Alaska. The balance of that could be such as projects as the tourism and different areas, but I'm just saying for you to think about something like that.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Larson?
Yeah, the other thing, too, we had meetings with the Alaska Conference of Mayors and others yesterday in relation to municipal assistance and revenue sharing, and since that time we have also discussed what we can do in relation to a type of an economic aid package or so forth to municipalities. You have just introduced a second twist. I think we should bring up the first twist, too, without saying one's right and one's wrong, but that is that we do not look at increasing municipal assistance and revenue sharing, but we look at some type of an economic impact on a per capita basis. And as I stated yesterday, this too could be a loan from the Rail Belt Energy Fund. It would need somewhere between $25 and $50 million to do that, depending upon whether you wanted to make the per capita grant $50 or $100. I do like the approach that we give the municipality some flexibility, whether they use the money to reduce taxes, to help them with their operating budget, to carry forth capital projects. I think this is something that we should look towards, some type of a development grant to the municipalities. And whether it's ELF that fuels it or whether it's a loan from the Rail Belt Energy Plan, I think that's something that we need further discussion on.
Representative Warkin.
Based on the new contract prices, do we have projected revenues for FY90?
No, not at this particular time. You would use the higher number. You can also call Vince or check logs. Yes, Representative Rieger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess a couple of points. One is on this, I'm looking at the sheet, which is the summary sheet of the House and Senate and the spending getting down to a bottom number. But really, you know, what looks the most striking to me is the fact that there's the line in the middle which reads FY89 revenues, $1.908 billion. And comparing that to the very next to the bottom line, total FY89 expenditures, $2.153. And that difference, you know, even if the deficit that's left over is made up, is basically comprised of spending non-recurring revenues. And so I think no matter what the committee comes up with, I think it's important to keep in mind that even looking at the Senate's number of 2.153, there is a $250 million gap between ongoing revenues and the current year's proposed expenditures. If you look at the House number and assume that's the right one, it's a $350 million gap in round numbers. So I would hope that in the approach to how to make these numbers reconcile, that rather than starting item by item and asking what looks attractive and what looks unattractive and take the ones that we think are attractive, I think that when we get done and tally it all up, the total will be higher than what we can afford, and I think it would be a good move to start by asking what level of overall spending makes sense and work backwards and see how many things can fit within a realistic level of spending. In the difference in the operating between the two numbers, which is only $20 million, I would like to see an approach where we start with the lower number and see what can be cut out of there and replaced with increments of higher priorities to this body. Net zero changes without increasing the total and see how far you can get that way. The other point I had to make on a different subject was on the AHFC and the ADA. I think that I've been asking those agencies, and in particular AHFC, for years and been telling them that sooner or later, if they wanted to protect their bond rating and wanted to protect the fiscal stability of their agency, they would have to come up with a long-range plan which provides for turning over surplus revenues back to the state general fund. For years, in the early 80s, there was a concern that without any appropriations, there was going to be a hump that had to be crossed in about 1989 where the appropriations would run out, the extra surplus in that agency would run out before freeing up of reserves on bond issues could carry it forward, because there is some cash in that fund which earns enough to carry some of the subsidy. But because of the drop in demand and the drop in interest rates, that what used to be that hurdle in 1989 has been cleared, and I think that it might be worthwhile for this committee to send a letter to them or ask them to come up with such a plan, because I believe that the bond rating agencies and the financial community will be alarmed if the legislature reaches in and takes money, but they won't be alarmed if the agency comes up with a long-range plan which, A, shows how this return of cash is fiscally sound and the impetus is from the agency. I think it would cost the state a lot in extra interest costs if the move is unsolicited and comes from the legislature is taking rather than the reverse of being voluntarily served. And I believe that the agency is going to have to come up with that anyway. And maybe it would be good for our committee to send a letter like that to ask them to come up with that long-range plan.
I have no problem if you'll work with me on sending a letter such as that. But at this time that, you know, I've always encouraged in cutting the operating budget, but with the economy as it is, I think we'd need to stabilize spending in government, which will help, hopefully, the economy. But I think in the next 6 years that we need drastically to cut the operations of state government down, and I've always stated that it should be no more than $1.4 billion for state operating and no more than 12,500 employees. And I've always said that, and I think it's got to be done over time, though. And I say in the next 6 years, because, you know, the drop of oil revenues will start between 6 and 7% per year, and that has an effect on our revenues. Yes.
I would agree with that this year should be held as a stable budget, and I think I've been calling for that since November of last year. And I think that, to me, a stable budget is based on a premise of FY88 continuation into FY89. The question is, what increments can the legislature afford, and if there are increments, shouldn't something else be reduced to make room for those new higher priorities?
When you force me to vote on state employees increase like last year, I have a problem with your statement. That has cost us considerably amount of money, and in the range of $80 million, and also that you had approximately $24 million in increase in formula programs. You have new facilities that we have put out, such as Seward Correctional Facility and also Juno Pioneer Home, and also an increase of $11 million in our debt service. You may respond. I know you want to. Did you want to respond?
Well, I'll respond that I think that in the case of the Seward facility, the legislature also saved the contractual money that they were paying to Minnesota or wherever it was that they used to house those same prisoners. There is a higher net cost, and that was a cost which in large part was incurred because the state was not ordered to build that prison, but rather settled a case. before it came to a final decision by the court. And I think something that this legislature also has to look at is the various settlements that the state enters into before we push the case to a conclusion. We've had numerous history of settlements, and the Cleary case is just one of those. They are court orders, but only because the court ordered a decree which ratified the settlement. And in many of these cases, if you build a new facility, it should be to replace some older facility. The state is not growing, and there shouldn't be a need for a new facility unless something else can be retired corresponding to it.
Representative Frank and Representative Rieger, I know you're not on subcommittee chairmen, but I would welcome your suggestion and comments as we go through these in the next couple of days. Representative Boyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to comment in response generally to the issue of how we prioritize things, I agree that we need to reshuffle things here too, and I think that when you look at your kind of moral and therefore your constitutional requirements under the law for funding, Representative Brown and others have been certainly discussing this kind of approach, but I would hope that next year when we come in here, we kind of lay those sacred cows on the table that are outside of our constitutionally mandated programs. And those cows, some of them were called longevity bonus and municipal assistance, revenue sharing, and a lot of the commerce budget or, programs, those things that are clearly the province more of private enterprise than they are of government, loan programs, including the little bit that we do continue to fund for student loans, things like that that are clearly outside of our constitutional health, education, welfare, court system kind of constitutional requirements. And you put those things out so that the public can make a conscious decision of whether or not they want to continue to spend one-time funding sources for those. And my guess is that you're going to be somewhere under that $1.9 billion revenue cap if you begin to do those things. And the public then can see something that they're buying with their vote, and their vote might be to spend earnings or other kinds of things. But that's an approach, and I know the public thinks that you're twisting their arm or putting some kind of duress on them when you line things up like that, but I think that clearly the Constitution has set out some things that the government should be involved in. We should fund those things first, and all of these things that we've added over the many, many years that we've had extra money in the till should be the things that we look at first for reducing. And I would look forward to the minority's work in helping put that list together next year, too.
Representative Rieger.
As long as we're having a good philosophical debate. Actually, I concur with those comments. I'd just like to point out two areas. One, it's not just sacred cows, as you say, but rather entitlement programs. And I think over the last 4 years, the state has had to address four entitlement programs, and I think they will, by the end of the session, have successfully addressed three of them. Those are the student loans, general obligation debt, school debt, and the longevity bonus, each one which was growing when I first came into the legislature 4 years ago. And I think that we have not authorized any new general obligation debt. That is going to be a decrease in the state's overall demands on general funds of in excess of $12 million per year from now on. School debt, the House passed House Bill 380, which would put a moratorium on new school debt, which, if it passed, would reduce the demand on school debt reimbursement by $8 million per year. Student loans, had we continued to general fund it, would have reduced the demand for general fund cash by about $5 to $6 million per year. That was the one which I was not satisfied with the solution, but so be it. And with the longevity bonus, if we go to the annuity program, which I understand will probably be on the floor this coming week, that entitlement program, which otherwise would grow to $100 million a year by about the turn of the century, will also not be growing as far as the demand on general fund cash. Now, I think a new one has started to come up, which is Medicaid. There's a bill in the House, which I haven't seen move forward, but I think that's one which is already in the neighborhood, I believe, of, is it $20 million general funds and growing. That one is almost now a fifth major entitlement program which needs to be looked at. But so that's point number one. On the other one about juxtaposing programs against new sources of revenue, I would agree with that, but I hope that when that juxtaposition that takes place, that the question that's asked is to take the least essential parts of government spending and put those up against the new revenue source and ask the public, is this what you support? Rather than taking, as was the case last year, operation and maintenance of roads and putting that in press releases to the public and say, you must pay a higher, an 8 cent per gallon higher tax if you want to have your roads maintained this year. Now, we rejected that, but that was the question. Or this year, if you want funding for education to continue or to increase, you must use permanent fund earnings. What I see is that the basics are being what's juxtaposed against the new revenue sources, not the what was commonly perceived as the least essential parts of state government. But with that caveat, I think that I like that approach.
You are correct as far as the general obligation debt service. That should, that hopefully in the next 5.5 years it will no longer be on the books. But then you did discuss the debt service. We will probably have the pleasure of voting on a project in your particular community which could increase that considerably. And yes?
I think I would like, I would be the first to try to put something in, something on statute which prevents that type of financing. We've had instances of it, and I think that in the eyes of the bond community, a lease purchase is practically a general obligation debt. It's not, but it is a tremendous obligation as far as the moral obligation. And I think we should look at that and try to gain control of lease purchase financing.
Anything else? Yes, Representative Boyer.
Just also for the, as long as we're being philosophical and for the record, the Medicaid issue is a large issue. It's incredibly complex in trying to deal with it, but there is a health care commission that we got started this year, and I'm a member of that commission, and we have been looking at all kinds of cost containment issues, and some of them will relate specifically to the facilities costs and facilities reimbursement through that Medicaid budget that we hope to at least stem the upward spiral, out of what on some level seems out of control spiral of costs, and that will not be an easy issue as a set of issues to deal with next year, but we will have some recommendations that are going to be made. And I mentioned here a week or so ago that the Pioneers Home is another issue area that relates to the Medicaid, could potentially relate to the Medicaid budget, and we could offset some general fund dollars there with making that a Medicaid-eligible set of facilities around the state. That's going to be clearly controversial. But there are lots of ways to spend money in the budget, and we can give away money through subsidies to pharmaceuticals or pharmacists in this state by a bill that keeps being held up in the Senate each year, or we can give away all kinds of money at all different levels, and it just depends on what we want to continue to give away and what we want to continue or what we want to try to grab back, and that all fits into how we decide to spend or prioritize our spending in the state too. Next year, I would hope that we continue to look at areas where we can recapture revenue that we've let slip through our fingers over the years. Some of those decisions that are tied with the recapture of that revenue are not easy issues to deal with, as we know.
Representative Gull.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just wondering what your thoughts were on this question. Some of the budgets, as you pointed out, that came back from the Senate seem to have some real holes in them that could lead to some problems in administering those agencies. And I think it's pretty important that we meet the goal of reducing the House budget, $10, $15, $20 million, whatever can be done. And I'm a little concerned about taking the agency-by-agency approach in isolation and trying to find ways in each budget equally to achieve that. And I was wondering if you had any thoughts about something along the lines of nominating as a full committee those areas where particular cuts seem in order and trying to strike some sort of balance among the agencies, or whether you don't think that's practical for you.
Now we'd probably nominate your areas for rejection. In the ferry system, I don't think that's very good. So
no, I wasn't referring to the ferry system. I was thinking more about the Department of Fish and Game, where
I'm substantial. Each of you have done public hearings in each of your subcommittees, and I'm just going to basically ask to look in your expertise in your respective areas instead of nominating some other agencies or Representative Brown.
Well, if we're about to break up, which it sounded like, I wanted to just briefly bring up House Bill 432 and 555. We're going to have for the benefit of the people that are here, we're going to have a work session at 4 o'clock today, and we're also going to be discussing some of the related housing issues that the Housing and Banking Subcommittee have been working on. So we invite anyone's participation who's interested in that general topic.
Are you going to merge the bills or not?
I think not.
Okay, thank you. Representative Sweathammer.
Mr. Chairman, listening to the philosophical discussion here, obviously beauty is in the eyes of the beholder. And what concerns me a little bit is that I'd like to have the discussion about where the priorities are going to be. To give you, for instance, I'm more than willing to try to make some sacrifices within the budgets that I chair, but my priorities would be in other areas, Fish and Game and DEC and that sort of thing. And I like to have that discussion in terms of where we're going to go, you know, as a committee in trying to reach the overall goal of 15, 20 million or whatever it happens to be. I don't want to be in a situation where I feel I'm going to be on the tail end of the stick, so to speak, if I give up $2 or $3 million out of the budgets that probably are needed.
Representative Davis.
Thank you, Sharon. I guess I have